Well, it was just weird because at some point, when the British said they might send some naval assets, to the general region, not to the Strait of Hormuz, the Trump said something along the lines that, "Oh, we don't need your help now. You know, we already won. It's too late." And now, of course, he wants them to come out. It's just they're so much all over the place. It's very strange to watch the lack of narrative control, management of allies. Now shocking, but. But before, you mentioned Macron wanting to join this diplomatic effort, or I think it's important to be specific. He wanted to join the trilateral Russia-US-Ukraine format. And this is kind of problematic because if he joins as a spoiler, it's just going to ruin the whole thing. That is the desire to prolong the war. I thought that he might have more success if he would just suggest, you know, let's open bilateral diplomacy because... there wouldn't be nothing to lose. If the France and the Russia is able to improve relations, that would be good on its own. And worst case, one creates some divisions within the EU about those who don't want it. So, there's no lose for Russia. But joining in on the disestablished format when the Europeans have more or less expressed their desire to sabotage it, it doesn't make any sense. However, you've seen a wider development, though. The Belgian prime minister said it's time to restore normal diplomatic relations with Russia. This is the same prime minister who didn't want to steal the Russian assets. Even President Stubb of Finland, who's a real Russophobe to his core, argued at some point we're going to have to start speaking with Russia again. Obviously, things aren't going well in the proxy war in Ukraine, but also... the Iran war, I think, has really shook them because the energy they're cut off from, so the economies will just go south from here on. And security-wise, the Americans are distracted. They have no weapons to send. They have no ability to escalate or bluff, put any ultimatums to Russia, even if they would want to. So it seems Russia is in a stronger position. Do you see any possibility of any, well, what would be the conditions for Russia to open up any negotiations or discussions with the Europeans, or aren't there any?
That is a very, very difficult question because let's face reality. Who do you trust in Europe? I mean, especially coming from the French or the Germans. Let's not forget Hollande, who got beaten to the press only by Merkel to laugh and jump up and down and tell them how they pulled Vladimir by the nose and just bought a bunch of time for Ukraine to build up for war with Russia, by the way. That's what they said. It wasn't just for the Donbass, retake the Donbass. So how do you trust anything that's coming out of those governments? There are continuations, basically, in one form or another with Merz and Macron. I don't think you can trust anybody in that. And the problem is even these more outlier parties that are now populist parties getting power, like Front National or Alternative for Deutschland. The problem is their leadership is being groomed into being just another party. And it's, as I was talking to a couple of some Germans that I know, they said at the grassroots or the Bundesland area level, you're still facing an AfD that is what it was. But at the federal level, they've been co-opted already. And Front National has been co-opted for quite a long time. I mean, they're the ones that were screaming that, yeah, we don't mind sending weapons. No soldiers, we're not going to send soldiers, but we don't mind sending weapons to Ukraine. So what's the difference here? And then you look at Farage, and Farage is, for all intents and purposes, the rebirth of the Conservative Party 2.0, except he's talking about we don't want immigration. Of course, the conservatives said the same thing, and you saw what happened in England. You just keep getting flooded even worse under the conservatives. Everything that else that's coming out of Farage's mouth is neocon playbook. He's just reading right off the talking points for neocons. So again, who do you trust in Europe? You can trust people like, well, the Belgians, the reason the Belgians, first and foremost, the reason the Belgians didn't want to take the Russian money is simply because they know what den of thieves that they're a part of. And once everybody takes their share and puts it in their pocket, whenever it gets to that point, there will be lawsuits against Euroclear, and Russia will take that money out of Euroclear offices all over the world. It'll bankrupt Euroclear totally. And then it'll come after the Belgian government in lawsuits. And the Belgian government's the only one that's going to be paying. And Belgium cannot afford $300 billion or euros. It'll bankrupt the entire country, and you can sell off all the, you can sell off the king and queen, and you can sell off all the castles and all the museum parts, and you still will never pay this sum off. And that's the problem. And they were smart enough to realize, yeah, when everybody goes, hey, we're behind you, you know, we're really all behind you, really far behind you, counting the money we just stole. So have fun. Good luck. We're morally behind you. Because of the Belgian said, well, let's sign a document that will split the damages across the board. Nobody signed that document. Nobody was going to go for that. No, no, no. You just go ahead and we're morally with you there, but you know, to the end. So it's the EU. What can you say? It's a den of thieves. Each one trying to get over on the other one and climb up the ladder to be the head of the guild of thieves. But that's what you're looking at. I mean, you're not looking exactly at people that have any concept of honor or respect or loyalty. You're looking at cutthroat politics that are unified. But the moment you take away the Russian threat, what are they unified by? Just the lust for power and machinations between each other. I mean, you're not talking about something you can build a foundation of a society on or a civilization. There is no civilization idea in Europe, modern in the EU. There's a civilization idea in the Eastern Europe called Russia, and those that are now being drawn to it. There's a civilization idea in the former Austro-Hungarian Empire, well, for most of it anyways. But the remainder of Europe, including the Germans and their middle Europe concept that's been around since the 1880s, there's no civilizational idea anymore. What do they got to bring to anybody? So this is just it's managers. You don't have leaders in Europe. You have managers, and very poor managers with possible good high-paying jobs in America after they leave. So I don't know, Europe. Who do you talk to in Europe? I mean, quite simply, if I was sitting in a Kremlin right now, I would ignore everything coming out of Europe except Orban, people like Orban and Fico have proven themselves. Maybe Babich, they would have to depend on how much he can prove himself. But who else do you trust?
I noticed that in Russia, some of the rhetoric over how, you know, the Minsk was a ruse. That it has some similarities to the Libyan issue, because I remember after they fooled the Russians over Libya, Russia took a very different stance over Syria. Now you see, after the Minsk, and of course you could put Istanbul into that same mix, the distrust now towards any real diplomacy, it's quite astonishing, which makes it very, I guess, difficult to find some. Any settlement doesn't mean that settlement can't be done. It just means that the trust component, which is important to make any deal work, is completely absent. But you mentioned before the whole idea of the Russians being prepared to take a stronger stance against the Europeans. But how about the United States? Because we've seen some reports in the media and some politicians who are outraged because they allege that Russia has handed over intelligence to the Iranians in terms of American targets, which seems quite reasonable. I just assumed that would happen. But, you know, no self-reflection. They don't seem to recognize they've been doing the same for the past few years. So, but nonetheless, when Trump was asked about this, you know, he was kind of dismissive. Either the day I didn't do it, or it's just minor stuff like we've done in Ukraine, or they think we've done in Ukraine, he said.
Minor stuff in Ukraine, yeah. I mean, what's the major stuff? You try to assassinate the president of Russia. I don't know. What could be more major than that? Yeah.
But are the Russians also willing to push back harder against the United States?
Definitely, I think so. And the confidence is growing. And even the Chinese, who took a big step back from Iran, the beginning of all this, have changed their stance quite a bit too. It's true they had their radar systems there, but the Chinese are taking a long step back to see how it's going to go. And now they're looking at it and going, oh, that's how it's going to go. You know, land lease, you know, when land lease started coming to the Soviet Union, there's a concept called, you know, success breeds success. Well, in 1942, in January 1942, when the British ambassador to the Soviet Union took a nice little drive up to Klin, which is northwest of Moscow. Well, back then it was about 120 kilometers. That's about 90 kilometers. Moscow keeps growing. And he came out and got to see what was left of the smoking ruins of a German division that was surrounded and cleaned and exterminated. And he went back and he telegraphed back to Churchill and to Roosevelt, I think they're going to win. And that's when they went, oh, okay, we'll back them now. It's the same thing here. Here I was going back and looking at the Iranians and going, I think they're going to win. They got a pretty damn good chance of winning. Because, oh, the big bully's come and he's going to take everybody out. Well, you know, when you're the big bully, once you've established yourself as the big guy in the, on the basketball court, you really don't want to fight anybody. Because, you know, you can smack around the little guys, but some medium-sized or bigger guy, even if you beat him, he's going to take so much out of you, everybody starts to lose respect for you or starts to lose fear of you. And this is what we're seeing. Yeah, you can kill as many Iranian civilians as you want. The Iranians are clearing the Americans out of the Persian Gulf, and the Iranians aren't breaking. They're just, in fact, they're doubling down and delivering blow after blow. No matter what Trump says, you know, Trump's different positions between breakfast, lunch, brunch, dinner, and midnight snack. And he's, you get the whole plethora of what the hell is he talking about today. But the Iranians are standing around. In fact, the Iranians said, we're not asking for peace. They flat out said this. We're not asking for peace. We don't see any reason for peace right now. So they're not looking for peace. They're looking for to punish the Americans and to make it as painful, more maximally as painful as possible. They're looking to expulse the Americans out of the Persian Gulf, and they're doing a damn good job so far, at least from direct kinetic. But they're also pressuring the Arabs to go, look, you're not getting any help from the Yanks. They're not here to protect you. You're the front. You're there to absorb, you know, our blows for them, but they're not going to protect you. And that's starting to play a lot on a lot of these Arabs, from what I've been told by sources. The Saudis have told the American bases to, you know, go screw yourself. We're neutral. We're not going to help you survive the best you can. And that's, if that's true, that's a pretty big blow. And as much as we've seen Lindsey Graham, just screaming and hollering. I don't know what drugs he was on this time. It's a couple of the videos lately, his eyes are rolling in the back of his head, and he looks like he's either very, very drunk or on something else. But, you know, Lindsey Graham, they're screaming up and down that, we defended you, and you're not defending us, the Saudis. You have to come, you're sorry, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's just, that's another sign of that desperation. They take the mask off, and we are trying to strong-arm these countries. And the countries are going, no, thanks, bye-bye. Have a good life. You know, what are going to be the reactions after this kind of war is over? Well, things keep going. They've hedged their bets that the USA isn't going to be in any position to do anything to them in retaliation. That's the position that they're holding. Besides, Trump's got his new play toy. He's going to go invade Cuba. He's already invaded Greenland, kind of. He's got a war he can't win, but he's thinking about invading Iran. But yeah, why worry? We're already going to invade Cuba. So, I mean, he's got his agenda. You know, we've got to do so many things before for the bucket list. I guess that's one more thing for the bucket list.
Since war is always the solution, if one is full of hubris, after Venezuela, then of course, then we have to go to the war. And if one is humiliated, as now with Iran, then, well, we have to change the focus and get a victory behind us, you know, then, okay, well, then it's also war. But either way, it seems to go towards war. But in terms of, the pressure tactics, and it seems as if perception becomes reality. That is, if all these countries in the region thought the U.S. was winning and Iran was on its back foot, then of course they would want to bet on the winning horse. As you said before, that's what countries do. But if you look at this, from Saudi Arabia to Azerbaijan, all these countries which most likely had some false flag attacks against them as well, now they're saying, well, we don't really want to do this after all. That's a good indication, though, of where things are going. And it's I can see why Russia and China would want to, you know, reduce the U.S. Presence in the Middle East, and at least scale them back in places like Iraq. But also there seems to be a wider message. That is, if all the Gulf nations will reach the conclusion that actually being frontline states for the U.S. Will not give us security. It will only ensure that bombs will drop on our heads. This message is going across the world. In East Asia, you have the South Koreans now discussing, well, look what happened. America had some rough times and they took away all our air defense systems. What would they do for us? And maybe that message... Sorry?
And they did it in the middle of the night.
Yeah, just in case they would notice. But now, you know, maybe this message comes across to the Europeans as well. If the Russians would now seek to restore their deterrent and, drop a bomb on some... weapons manufacturers in Germany, what would really the U.S. do? It might, even pull out its air defenses. So it's, I can see why they would want, why there's a lot to gain from, if not the defeat of the U.S., at least some retreat. Just to say, I guess the last question is, what do we know so far about the Russian support, or what do you think about it, as well as the Chinese support? What are they actually doing for Iran?
Well, Russia shipped in. Let's remember one thing: that Russia back in 2005 and even 2004, Russia wanted to sign an agreement with Iran on the level of Belarus and North Korea, a mutual defense agreement. The Iranian liberals who were in charge at that point refused. The defensive clause, I think, if I remember correctly, that's fifth section, third paragraph, went down to something along the lines of from an actual defensive clause that's in with Belarus and North Korea, a solid defensive clause, went down to something: we will struggle together against mutual regional threats. Which means what? It means absolutely nothing. It's empty air. It's just a word salad. That when you boil away the extra the fat off of it, there's nothing there. So it's a pointless document. Russia signed that document and ratified it right off the bat. Iran signed that document the second day it was getting lots of loving from the West, because we want to be loved by the West. The Saudis also want to be loved by the West. And when the West was giving it lots of loving is when it finally signed that document, and it's still not much of a document. But what followed afterwards, and the liberals in Iran now losing power and prestige after that little 12-day war, and all the mass murders that the Israelis commenced upon inside of Iran, what came out of that was the Russian aid. So MiG-29s, Su-35s, S-400s that we've yet to see. They're being husbanded. I think they're being husbanded for whenever the Americans actually get enough gumption up to bring in their B-52s. If I was Iranians, that's what I'd be doing. I'd be husbanding those S-400s and waiting for the B-52s to start coming in and then take them out of the sky. They're slow and they're big. That's a hard target to miss. So... additionally, Russia brought in a lot of technology upgrades for propulsion systems, avionics, jamming. Never mind, Russia brought in the jamming systems that blocked the Starlinks and allowed to identify the Iranians and identify where those terminals were located. Let's not forget that. So that's jamming equipment. And a lot of this was for the existing fleet of ballistic missiles and air assets. And for future, obviously, also. Additionally, targeting. I mean, that's what the Americans, they was, oh, they're helping and targeting. Well, why wouldn't they? You've been doing this for 4 years. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. But no, it's not. How dare they do this to us? They're evil. Okay, so what have you been doing for the last 4 years? I mean, either they're that hypocritical or they're that lacking of self-awareness. I'm going with hypocritical. I'm pretty sure they know what they've been doing. And they've been bragging about it until it gets done to them. Like, oh, you can't do that. We're the exceptional people. You can't play. It's a rules based order. We make the rules. You can't do that. That's in the rules. Well, yes, we can. Additionally, Russia has been bringing in a lot of its experience with with drones. Speaking of drones, there was a sound bite from Trump that there are no such thing as underwater drones and seaborne drones, because we would have killed them by now. See, it's all artificial intelligence. And the Iranians posted another one of those drive-through tunnel moments where they're just going down one tunnel and there's a bunch of these waterborne drones. It just rolls like they're done with airborne drones. Like, okay, it's all artificial intelligence. You know, if it doesn't fit Trump's agenda or Trump's momentary lapse of sanity. By the way, there's something else to consider in this too. The council, if I remember their name correctly, it's the Security Council of Iraq. It's basically a council of militias, of the Shia militias. And what they've said to al-Jilani is, you take a step into Lebanon, and we're going to turn turn Syria into a new battleground. We'll come across in mass and wipe you out. Plus, you know, he's still fighting the Alawites, what's left of the Kurds, and the Christians and the Shia. So Syria is not a done deal. And I think once the Americans and the Israelis are beaten back, or they're stuck in a very wide war, as they've now started today, a full invasion of southern Lebanon, the al-Jilani is going to find himself with a bit of a problem, because those Iraqi Shia militias are itching to go in for a fight. And Iran is going to be empowered. And I'm sure the Russian military is not going to sit idly by either.
Yeah.
Al-Jilani may very, very quickly find himself from being chopper to playboy to American refugee. And his regime is going to be a very short-lived one. Now, it all depends on how much the Americans are left in the Persian Gulf. If they've been eradicated out of the Persian Gulf, al-Jilani's head is going to be rolling if he doesn't jump a plane and take off fast enough. So Syria may bounce back as an entity, at least to some degree.
I've been looking over like all the journal articles and all academic work from 2012 and this era when there were talks about going to war with Iran. And it's interesting that the main conclusions were always, well, this is just a crazy gamble. It's like a recipe for a prolonged war. There's too many unknown variables. If you go after Iran, then that will spill out in essentially every part of the entire region. I mean, this just seems like it was very, very predictable. Of course, what wasn't predictable back then was that they would be fighting a proxy war against Russia. And this also is impacted greatly by this war. So, any last thoughts?
Yes, the satellite imagery seems to suggest that the Chinese are getting ready to return with open arms one of their provinces. So the only one that isn't part of China yet, if you get my point. This is prime time to do it. The Americans are out of missiles. The Americans are jammed up. The Americans are looking like fools. Hey, it's a good time to, and they're pulling all their systems out of everybody else. It's a good time to go look at Taiwan and go, yeah, baby. It's time to come home. So whether the Taiwanese want to or not, and there's a very large faction in Taiwan that wants full reunification with China. So let's not forget that. So yeah, the Chinese may finally see the green light to make their move. I mean, this is going to have, it's having, and it's going to continue to have ramifications well outside of this battle space that they're presently in. And that Trump's advisors were either psychotically, heretically religious in that that Christian Zionism heresy, we're going to bring the end of the world and Armageddon and all that, or they were just so bought by the Israelis that they just threw caution to the wind. You know, whichever it is, I think it's probably a combination of both. They're going to be reaping that whirlwind for a very long time.
Yeah, well, you know, Joe Kent was appointed by Trump to be the director of the National Counterterrorism Center. He has resigned now because he opposed the war against Iran. Not only did he say this made no sense because Iran posed no imminent threat to our nation, which contradicts Trump, but he also make the point that this only started because of pressure from Israel and the Israel lobby. I mean, this is just, this is Trump's own guy, so I think this is really going into the history books as one of the great, great blunders of the United States. And interesting times. So thank you very much for taking the time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Always a pleasure. I wish it was better more happier topics, less more joyous topics, but.